Welcome to the Mitch Hanks Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on the Mitch Hanks Show.
It might seem crazy. It is crazy. In fact, we're going to get to the William Sessions, not William, Jeff Sessions. The old guy was William. That was the guy Clinton fired back in the day. No, we'll get to that testimony and the Attorney General shortly. But more importantly, more directly, our own Scott Ross of One Wisconsin Now is on the phone. Hello, Mr. Ross.
Mitch, how are you today?
I'm good. I saw you on Tucker Carlson's show. I was flipping the channels, and there you were.
Yeah? How did I do?
All cleaned up, and you look, you know, clean cut. You know, there are no ponytails this time.
Easy.
I haven't seen you in a ponytail.
This guy never had a ponytail.
I know. But you were, you know, very proper looking. And then, of course, you made your argument. But you were talking about free speech and the Republican effort in Wisconsin to protect, quote-unquote, free speech by making it illegal to disrupt or interrupt speakers on campus. Is that what we're talking about here?
Yeah, the Republican bill is what we consider to be prior restraint, yes. But you're essentially right. They said that there's a problem, so they want to create this new system whereby students and faculty administrators could have less than the First Amendment protections that everybody else has in the state of Wisconsin.
Now, I will have to push back a bit on this because I did consult with a certain conservative talk show host who showed me her video that she shot with her phone at the Ben Shapiro event. And there was severe heckling and harassment and name-calling and kind of a mob-type choreography that made it hard to pass through. I did see UW police, because in the interview with Tucker, you cited all the different police jurisdictions, UW, Capitol, Madison. But in this instance, the UW cops just stood and watched. They didn't do anything.
Well, let me just say this, that protest lasted like 7 minutes.
Oh, no.
And then the speaker was allowed to deliver his remarks in full. That's it. Full stop. Boom. Got to do his remarks.
Well, I think this could have been after the speech. I'm not exactly sure when this was, but it was.
No, this is right before the speech started. They did their protest, and then they left in an orderly fashion.
Well, what I saw was more than 7 minutes, so we'll have to consult the videotape.
Yeah. I think you would have to consult the thing that they are talking about. The protest was 7 minutes, then they left. There may have been people heckling during the speech, but when
you bring a provocateur like
Ben Shapiro on campus, that's going to happen.
But aren't we both provocateurs? I mean, aren't we all provocateurs?
I don't think that we need a special, and you and I, neither of us are asking for a special safe space so that we don't have to hear other people saying, what you're saying is bad. I mean, I think that you and I have the opposite of that. We want robust speech. And
what this
plan here in the state of Wisconsin does, and there's two different bills, and they're both awful, is that they want to curtail free speech, and they actually want to create, not only prior restraint, but they want to But they want to have it so students can snitch on each other.
Well, okay, but how would this preclude a peaceful march on the sidewalk or even in the street if you get a permit or whatever the case, or a sit-in or whatever these appropriate means are for peaceful demonstration? How would this law circumvent that?
Well, it says that if you even plan to have an event that might tell somebody not to come, that you can be subject to prosecution, which for college students is
expulsion. Well, that's out of control. But what I saw was a video of people in the lobby. I didn't see video of people in the hall. This was behavior in the lobby that I was watching.
Gotcha. Well, I'm talking about what happened during the actual event inside of the hall, because that's something that the Republicans have had a pants pee over since it happened. And, you know, again, a lot of times when you're talking about political fights, the facts are a little different from what the myth is. And the myth in this case is that Ben Shapiro...
So your point is he was allowed to speak, and there was maybe a seven-minute warm-up, and then he could speak, is your point.
Yeah.
Well, we cite the late Ed Garvey, who said Ayn Rand came to speak at when he was a student in 61, and actually continued a correspondence with her after that. And in the famous incident at Columbia in the late 60s, General Westmoreland, the Vietnam commander, was booed down and couldn't be heard. And then Elder Lowenstein, who was an activist, anti-war activist, said, "I won't speak unless you let him speak." So, I mean, I don't know. Are we disagreeing? I mean, shouldn't speakers be allowed to speak once
they have been. There has not been one speaker in the state of Wisconsin at a college campus who has been denied their ability to speak.
Well, I mean, that's just not true. Ward Connerly.
It is absolutely true.
Ward Connerly 20 years ago.
When was that?
20 years ago.
Okay, thank you very much. Exactly, that's my point. is that this kind of nonsense is not going on Wisconsin?
I mean, he wasn't allowed to speak. I mean, he was had to leave.
Wisconsin college campuses, it is not going on. Milo Yiannopoulos, who is just a repugnant racist.
And he thinks you're cute, by the way.
And he went and literally was able to speak and outed a transsexual student from the dais, from his speaking podium, at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, was not denied his ability to speak. That's the thing. I mean,
well, Milo was he was denied in California, though. But that
is not Wisconsin. That's the thing.
That's true.
And we discussed this last night on the show, Tucker and I, like, he can point, you know, I said you've shown a handful of examples. A handful of examples. We have 20.5 million university students in the United States, and attacking their right to protest when repugnant speakers come on campus because there are a couple, you know, Republican provocateurs who are being paid to come on campus specifically to create these kinds of environments, and, you know, is exactly what's behind it.
Well, by the Project Veritas stuff, then at all, that there were provocateurs at Trump rallies over a course of like 12 months.
No, that's ridiculous.
You don't buy that.
Garbage. I will say this, though. You know,
there was some videotape on that, but what's that?
There is a well-funded effort behind this because the Roosevelt Institute has gotten like $750,000 from the biggest right-wing funding source in the United States.
The Roosevelt Institute? Which Roosevelt are we talking about?
The Goldwater. My bad. The Goldwater Institute.
I was going to say.
Where this sample legislation came out of is funded, you know, ginormously by the biggest right-wing funding machine in America,
okay,
which is the Bradley Foundation out of Milwaukee.
So your concern is that people are going to be in trouble for things that happen before the speech takes place that aren't related to the speech itself. Is that?
Well, the thing, no, I mean, it's all of it, Mitch. Here's the thing. If somebody commits and goes over the line in terms of what is disorderly conduct, I think it should be left up to trained law enforcement personnel.
Yeah, but sometimes they don't do anything, like we saw with Ben Shapiro in the lobby.
They did something.
What I saw, they
did
nothing.
The protest ended. You said that you're talking about people who were out in the hallway.
In the lobby, yeah.
What's wrong with that?
Well, it just was physically intimidating to the talk show host I'm referring to because she had it on her videotape.
Yeah,
her cell phone. Well, I saw it. I mean, it was evident. I mean, they were calling her all kinds of vulgar names.
And that's America. But again, like,
that is America to me.
If somebody crosses the line into violence or disorderly conduct, they absolutely should be prosecuted. We leave that up to law enforcement, not Jesse Kramer and Robin Voss, neither of which who are attorneys.
I think that people should be allowed to speak, but I'm with you. I mean, you can't stop people from organizing or telling somebody not to go to a speech. I mean, I would oppose that vehemently.
Yeah, but that's exactly what this bill is. That's the problem, Mitch. We are on the same page, but you can't believe the hype of what the right says because nobody does victimization like white Republicans. That is for sure. And again, nobody here was denied the ability to deliver their remarks in any kind of speech. And this is an effort it ain't the first time Robin Voss has gone after the rights of students. I mean, he, you know, was the architect of the voter rights, the voter ID law that specifically targeted students. That being, if you have an expired ID that's eligible, like a driver's license or a military ID, all those are eligible. The one thing that wouldn't be eligible is an expired student ID. You know, then to follow that up with, Robin Voss in the 2015 budget got rid of the institution that actually did nonpartisan voter registration and get out the vote efforts when he dismantled United Council and took away their funding. So, like, Robin has a long-standing enmity towards the university system. And I know because I had friends who served on United Council with him, and they constantly talk about, the way he acted.
Bizarre. Is he a UW grad?
Robin Voss? I think, wasn't there some kind of story him and Reince Priebus doing the underwear party or something like that? Talking about
I don't
remember that.
No, I don't know anything about that, Senator. and I refuse to comment on the underwear party reference. I just don't. Although I did think Ted Cruz would probably peek in a few windows when he was in Princeton.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, you and I are on the same page on this thing, which is we should have a robust speech.
I did a robust editorial denouncing people that interrupt speakers, and so I guess I should have withdrawn that, but it's going to air in the morning, so I'm screwed on that. But I basically said, no, you should enforce the ability of people to speak, you know, in the hall, and if that's, which, of course, it was. In the case of Ward Connolly, and it was 20 years ago, but that's how old I am.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just don't like that. I mean, to me, it's just BS. Shouting people down, it just turns me off. But,
yeah,
you know.
But you know what? We have the First Amendment. And the thing is that once the government gets involved, that's when you have a violation of the First Amendment, and that's the problem with this bill. You know, people fighting it out in terms, you know, verbally, that is not a violation of the First Amendment because it is not the government who is trying to stop them from speaking. Why, this is an attack on the First Amendment, and this is one of the things that I could not get through to Mr. Carlson, was that once the government gets involved, that's when it's a First Amendment violation.
I agree with what you said, but I will send you at some point the link on that video I'm describing, because it was definitely not cool.
Did she speak on it, or is it just video?
Well, it's interaction. Yeah, she's speaking with some of the her pursuers.
I'm not,
no, she's not speaking at the mic. I mean, it's in the lobby. There's back and forth with the combatants, yeah.
Yeah.
But of course,
my goodness, wait, she went there to get video of to say
no,
that the
they were
rambunctious.
They were,
and she got that video.
They were
after
calling her.
Wow,
I saw it. No, they called her vulgar names, and she just held up her phone and started shooting. That's what happened.
Well, I think that we can agree that that person is not denied their ability to have a public voice in the public policy debate, having a radio show that's on 5 days a week.
I would say the Senate has changed the subject, but that's okay. Well, no. I think we are, in general, we are in the parameters of agreement, but there could be some nuances here of discontent. But we appreciate the time. Scott Ross of One Wisconsin Now.
You have a wonderful
You have that
day,
in common with Donald Trump, the eternity of now. He's not interested in long-term things, and neither are you. One Wisconsin Now. So there you have it. All right, thank you so much, sir.
Take care.
Jeff Sessions was on to interrogation today. We're going to have some of that when we come back. It's pretty cool stuff. I just love the Southern thing. Remember Watergate? Senator, do you remember the meeting with Mr. Magruder on July the 27th? To the best of my recollection, no. Come back with the Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com. Six AM Marketing is a Wisconsin-based ad agency that doesn't look or act like other ad agencies. They don't follow conventional thinking and constantly push themselves and their clients to test the bounds of how far they can go. The result is relationships that have lasted more than 10 years. Clients refer to 6 AM and their work as fresh, insightful, strategic, edgy, and creative. 6 AM shows customers why your products and services are better than the competition. 6 AM's brand smart process helps you establish your brand in the market for years to come. With a client's marketing team by its side, 6 AM digs for the business problem the client is trying to solve and the business goals and objectives they hope to achieve, examining the market, competitors, the brand's consumers, and messaging to define a brand proposition that is both compelling and unique to the market. 6 AM Marketing. They do it differently, and they do it well. Go to 6ammarketing.com. That's www.6ammarketing.com.
At P3 Pro, we're invested in creating a dynamic video experience for our clients. Everything from planning, shooting, and editing your events, commercials, webcasts, or films. P3 Pro has 27 years of industry standard experience working to make your vision a reality. We stand apart from your traditional run-of-the-mill production experience and create memorable, moving, breathtaking imagery that conveys your message in a powerful way. We take your vision and turn it into a work of art. The art of storytelling, the art of beautifully crafted imagery, the art of persuasion. Visit us on the web at p3pro.xyz or call 608-571-3776. That's 608-571-3776.
This is the all-new Mitch Hanks Show.
In real estate, you want to work with Tim Rayl.
Working with Tim was a breath of fresh air. He was very professional. He did his homework. He priced the house where it needed to be priced to sell.
Let's get ink on paper today with Realtor Tim Rayl of Coldwell Banker's Success, 698-7653.
Tim is very fun to work with. He's got a great sense of humor and seemed very upbeat and positive every time I spoke to him.
Tim Rayl, 698-7653.
Joe here from Comedy on State. Hey, looking for something different to do with your friends? You got friends in town, maybe you're celebrating something. Comedy on State is a thing that you want to think of. It should be at least the third thing that pops into your mind. MadisonComedy.com is where you can go to find a complete schedule. Any comics that you could think of, we've had.
For a list of upcoming Comedy Club performers or to purchase tickets, go to MadisonComedyClub.com and click shows. Performer bios are available by clicking on their pictures.
That's Comedy on State, MadisonComedy.com or 256-0099.
Welcome back to the Mitch Hanks Show. Mitch seeks the truth by inviting all sides of the issue. Thanks for listening to the Mitch Hanks Show.
We are back. Jeff Sessions, as opposed to William, who was the FBI director fired under Bill Clinton. Actually, Jeff Sessions is the attorney general under Donald Trump. He testified today for a Senate committee on intelligence. And they were questioning him about the Comey firing and conversations with Donald Trump. It was a pretty heated exchange with the senator from California. I think it's Kamala Harris. And she's a prosecutor. And she was trying to nail him on why he wouldn't answer questions about conversations he was having privately with the president. This would be the one called Sessions, I believe. And you can hear the exchange, Kamala Harris and Jeff Sessions.
My question is, for any of your testimony today, did you refresh your memory with any written documents, be they your calendar, written correspondence, emails, notes of any sort?
I attempted to refresh my recollection, but so much of this is in a wholesale campaign of extraordinary nature. That you're moving so fast that you don't keep notes. You meet people. I didn't keep notes of my conversation with the Russian ambassador at the Republican convention.
I'd like to just talk about what you did.
You know, I'm just saying I didn't keep notes on most of these things, and there's nothing for me.
Will you provide this committee with the notes that you did maintain?
As appropriate, I will supply the committee with documents.
Can you please tell me what you mean when you say appropriate?
I would have to consult with lawyers in the department who know the proper procedure before disclosing documents that are held within the Department of Justice.
Attorney General,
I'm not
Sessions.
Able to make that opinion today.
Sir, I'm sure you prepared for this hearing today, and most of the questions that have been presented to you were predictable. So my question to you is, did you then review with the lawyers of your department, if you as the top lawyer are unaware, what the law is regarding what you can share with us and what you cannot share with us, what is privileged and what is not privileged?
We discussed the basic parameters of testimony. I frankly have not discussed documentary disclosure rules.
Will you make a commitment to this committee that you will share any written correspondence, be they your calendars, records, notes, emails, or anything that has been reduced at any point in time in writing to this committee, where legally you actually have an obligation to do so?
I'll commit to reviewing the rules of the department, and as and when that issue is raised, to respond appropriately.
Did you have any communications with Russian officials for any reason during the campaign that have not been disclosed in public or to this committee?
I don't recall it, but I have to tell you, I cannot testify to what was said as we were standing at the Republican convention before the podium where I spoke.
My question is only as
relates to your knowledge.
I don't
have a detailed memory of that.
Okay, as it relates to your knowledge. Did you have any communication with any Russian businessmen or any Russian nationals?
I don't believe I had any conversation with Russian businessmen or Russian nationals.
Are you aware
Although
of any communications?
A lot of people were at the convention. It's conceivable that somebody
sir,
came
sir,
up to me.
Sir, I have just a few.
Well, you let me qualify it. If I don't qualify it, you'll accuse me of lying. So I need to be correct as best I can.
I do want you to be honest.
And I'm not able to be rushed this fast. It makes me nervous.
Are you aware of any communications with other Trump campaign officials and associates that they had with Russian officials or any Russian nationals?
I don't recall that.
And are you aware of
At this moment.
Are you aware of any communications with any Trump officials, or did you have any communications with any officials about Russia or Russian interests in the United States before January 20th?
No, I may have had some conversations, and I think I did, with the general strategic concept of the possibility of whether or not Russia and the United States could get on a more harmonious relationship and move off the hostility. The Soviet Union did, in fact, collapse. It's really a tragic strategic event that we're not able to get along better than
before
we are
being
today.
Sworn in as Attorney General, how did you typically communicate with then-candidate or President-elect Trump?
Would you repeat that?
Before you were sworn in as Attorney General, how did you typically communicate with then-candidate or President-elect Trump?
I did not submit memoranda. I did not make formal presentations.
Did you ever communicate with him in writing?
I don't believe so.
And you referred to a longstanding DOJ policy. Can you tell us what policy it is you're talking about?
Well, I think most cabinet people, as the witnesses you had before you earlier, those individuals declined to comment because we're all about conversations with the president.
Sir, I'm just asking
that's
you about
a
the DOJ policy you referred
policy
to.
Policy that goes beyond just the attorney general.
Is that policy in writing somewhere?
I think so.
I think so. You know, what are you going to get? The whole thing, I watched some before I came in. You were at this reception of the Mayflower Hotel. Did you talk to the ambassador? I don't remember. Maybe I did. I mean, they got a reception line.
Talk to a lot of
You've got hundreds of people. The ambassador might have been there. There are other ambassadors, but the fat guy, the Russian ambassador, I use those words lightly, or, you know, cautiously, was there. The Mayflower Hotel. I don't remember talking to him at the Mayflower Hotel. But could you have been there? Yes. Could you have spoken about the collusion? No. No, we didn't. We didn't do collusion. You must have been talking about collusion. Didn't you see him at the Mayflower Hotel? Didn't you have two other meetings? Well, I saw the ambassador in my office, and I did see the ambassador at the convention in Cleveland. But I don't remember what we said, but we certainly didn't say anything about the campaign collusion, you know. I mean, what's going to happen? What are they going to do? You know, according to Alan Dershowitz, you've got to prove they helped the Russians with the hack. They coordinated the hack with the Russians. That's a high bar, isn't it? Kind of a high bar. Why did Carter Page go to Moscow for a consulting trip? I don't know. You know, why did Jackie Gleason go to Miami Beach to gamble? I mean, what? I mean, who's Carter Page? I mean, what did Carter Page ever do? I mean, this stuff, I mean, I'm not saying there won't be something, but Mitch, what about obstruction? What about obstruction? Well, I tend to agree with Dershowitz in the fact that the president is the head of a unitary branch, the executive branch. The president is the executive branch. And he can direct, or she can direct, department heads to investigate X or not investigate X. And they can pardon the people who are being investigated. Now, if you violate a subpoena or if you destroy tapes that are subpoenaed, that's, you know, that's a law that can't be broken. But in terms of telling people what not to investigate, the distinguished Mr. Dershowitz says they have that power. It's their constitutional power to do that. Now, you pay a price politically. Impeachment is purely political. It is not a legal exercise. Impeachment is not subjected to judicial review. It's totally political. So if Trump would fire Mueller, he might be impeached on political grounds. High crimes and misdemeanors are high political crimes and misdemeanors. That's what it is. And you take that risk. You play that game. I don't think Trump is going to fire Mueller. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he does. But, I mean, right now, I heard they had nothing. His sessions, I was at the Mayflower, and we were at a reception. I might have seen him. I don't remember. I might have talked to him. I don't remember. What about the time you saw him in the convention? Well, we saw each other in a coffee shop. I mean, just see, with Watergate, you started with a crime, the break-in. You started with a crime, and then you went from there. Here, the cover-up happens without a crime, and then you find ancillary crimes like obstruction or perjury as a result of the investigation on the cover-up of no crime, at least no crime so far. Now, Bernie Sanders goes nuts at Russell Vought, who's trying to be the deputy budget director of the White House, and it goes crazy over religion, and I'm going to get into it here, and it goes to religious freedom and religious doctrine, how that might affect public policy. Oh, it's pretty juicy stuff. Jed Sanborn will join me for that as well. The Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com. Need a comedian or MC for your private party or corporate event? Don't be shy. I can do it without telling any dirty jokes. In fact, when I'm not doing my Frank Sinatra tribute show, I've done stand-up at the comedy club and at private events for years. Whether it's a large convention or private gathering in your living room, I've done it. We all need to laugh more. The world can be even more stressful than it is. There's no business like show business, and I usually find those of you who have the best jokes about your coworkers at the company dinner. So feel free to contact me at 347-0374. That's 347-0374. Or email at info@madisontalks.com. That's info@madisontalks.com.
Mitch Hank for Atterbury, Cameron, Haig.
I'm proud to be sitting next to senior partner and a man who's been voted Wisconsin's super lawyer multiple times, Eric Haig. What do you say to people who feel guilty about hiring a lawyer when they're injured or harmed by a company?
Well, there's a stigma that's been developed over the years where people are made to feel guilty about bringing a claim because of injuries. I have yet to meet a person or take on a client who woke up in the morning and said, geez, I'm going to go out and I hope I get in an accident today so I can make some money. People come in because they genuinely need help, and they're overmatched against a large insurance company. So we try to get them fair compensation and understand that it's probably a time that's very traumatic for them. They need someone on their side to guide them through the process that they're unfamiliar with.
So when you need a lawyer, do what I did. Call Atterbury, Cameron, Haig and reach them at yourwisconsininjurylawyers.com. That's yourwisconsininjurylawyers.com.
Talk radio will never be the same. The uncommon sense of Mitch Hank has been unleashed worldwide. This is the all-new Mitch Hank Show.
If you operate a business, you know there is no one-size-fits-all solution for today's technology challenges. MadisonGeeks.com plans, services, and installs technologies for small and medium businesses like network systems, servers, firewalls, wireless access points, telecommunications, security, remote service options, and business productivity solutions. MadisonGeeks.com is your IT staff. They take time to sit down and discuss your needs and present cost-effective solutions. With a Better Business Bureau A-plus rating, they are your trusted IT outsource partner. Expect less downtime. Faster resolutions lead to more productivity. Fewer day-to-day issues. Their proactive maintenance helps prevent issues from occurring. MadisonGeeks.com also offers computer and laptop service and repair. Madison Geeks are there to help. They're known for their candid, friendly approach and reliable, ready response. Check them out online at MadisonGeeks.com.
Two Bridges was one of the toughest neighborhoods in New York, especially in the Al Smith projects. It was a no man's land with no rules. On Christmas Eve 1951, Mac Pastamadeo vanished without a trace while walking home with his little boy Angelo. Now 13, Angelo is a gang member and the only witness to the brutal murder of an undercover cop who holds a clue to Mac's disappearance 6 years ago. Stalked by killers, Angelo becomes part of an unlikely alliance of a priest, a mob boss, and a police detective in order to uncover the truth behind the murder and Mac's disappearance. Weepers by Nick Chiarkis.
Welcome to the Mitch Hank Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on the Mitch Hank Show.
All right, I was stunned to see this acrimonious demonstration by Bernie Sanders. I almost said Colonel Sanders. Again, the brain just slips away. He was talking to this nominee for Deputy White House Budget Director, the Office of Management Budget. Oh, Mitch, that's boring. No, it's not, because the guy was testifying. He had gone to a Christian college. I want to say Wheaton College. This Russell Vought guy, and he had done a posting about his Christian faith and the adherence to Jesus Christ as the central savior and so forth. And so he gets drilled by Bernie Sanders at the confirmation. And before we go to Jen Sanborn, who's on the line, I'll play this little clip. It's amazing.
Muslims do not simply have a deficient theology. They do not know God because they have rejected Jesus Christ, his son, and they stand condemned. End of quote. Do you believe that that statement is Islamophobic?
Absolutely not, Senator. I'm a Christian, and I believe in a Christian set of principles based on my faith. That post, as I stated in the questionnaire to this committee, was to defend my alma mater, Wheaton College, a Christian school that has a statement of faith that includes the centrality of Jesus Christ for salvation. And
again, I apologize. Forgive me. We just don't have a lot of time. Do you believe that people in the Muslim religion stand condemned? Is that your view?
Again, Senator, I'm a Christian, and I wrote that piece.
Well, what does that say?
The statement of faith of Wheaton
College. I understand that. I don't know how many Muslims there are in America. I really don't know. Probably a couple of million. Are you suggesting that all of those people stand condemned? What about Jews? They stand condemned too?
Senator, I'm a Christian.
I understand you are a Christian, but this country is made up of people who are not just. I understand that Christianity is the majority religion, but there are other people who have different religions in this country and around the world. In your judgment, do you think that people who are not Christians are going to be condemned?
Thank you for probing on that question. As a Christian, I believe that all individuals are made in the image of God and are worthy of dignity and respect regardless of their religious beliefs. I believe that, as a Christian, that's how I should treat all individuals.
And do you think your statement that you put into that publication, they do not know God because they've rejected Jesus Christ the Son and they stand condemned, do you think that's respectful of other religions?
Senator, I wrote a post based on being a Christian and attending a Christian school that has a statement of faith that speaks clearly with regard to the centrality of Jesus Christ in salvation.
I would simply say, Mr. Chairman, that this nominee is really not someone who is what this country is supposed to be about.
And that was the exchange, and I just couldn't believe it. I mean, you could have opened up on any number of people who claim to be Christians, or frankly, Congressman Ellison, who's Muslim, of Minnesota, the deputy chair of the DNC. I mean, down the line, if you want to get into the doctrine, Jed Sanborn joins me, who's a certified public accountant, former member of the city council, and Christian. Hello, Jed.
Hi, Mitch.
You heard that, and what's your reaction to the questions?
It's infuriating to me, actually, and Bernie Sanders displays both his bigotry, I think, against religion, his lack of understanding logic, you know, the idea that, yes, religions make mutually exclusive claims. You know, one religion doesn't believe that the other knows the right
the path to salvation, and that he's going to conclude that somebody is not the kind of person we want in government because they hold very orthodox Christian beliefs. I mean, it's disgusting.
Well, let's get down to it, because when I went to basketball camp at age 9, we had Bible studies at night, and they did say, unless you accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior, you will not be saved, and you will be, you know, I guess go to hell. I mean, that was kind of the message. I mean, that's a common Christian belief, isn't it? Christian doctrine?
It's central to Christianity, right, that Jesus' death on the cross is the atonement for our sins so that we can be reconciled to God the Father. So if you don't believe that, you don't get the benefit of that forgiveness. Is the whole tenet
right
of Christianity.
So what, yeah, I think gets Bernie upset, and I think you get into religious arguments in even bars with non-Christians, they will say, "Well, that means I'm going to burn if I don't do what I'm told and believe, as you described, that I'm burning." And so that's when the conversation gets.
But do people don't understand this? They don't. This is new information to people that religion, not just Christianity, but just all religions, believe that they understand ultimate reality. And if you don't believe that, you're sort of out of step with reality in a way that will affect your eternal soul. I mean, that's a basic tenet of any religion. So
well, yeah, there,
like,
some, there are some harsh, that's right, religion, yeah, isn't really negotiable then when it comes to some of these
right
basic tenets.
Maybe it's a sign of our times that people like to think of religion as just sort of kind of an interesting philosophy, not something that people actually believe corresponds to reality in the real world, you know, objective reality. And maybe Bernie Sanders doesn't quite understand this. Do people actually believe this stuff is true?
Well, I've had some of these philosophical discussions with what I consider to be true-believing Christians, and I have heard a difference of perspectives on the fate,
yep,
of non-believers. In other words, you would have the more strict fundamentalist interpretation is that all Jews or all Muslims or all non-believers would, you know, go into eternal fire.
Well, first of all, yes, you're right. First of all, there are different some differing philosophies within Christianity. There are some called universalists that believe that ultimately, one way or another, everyone is saved. There are also some subtle. There are also some sophisticated ideas about salvation. For example, if you ask the question, well, what about Moses? Right? What about Abraham? These people didn't believe in Jesus. Are they not saved? Well, then you get into sophisticated theological questions about, revelation and natural revelation versus, biblical revelation. The same with the question of what about people in remote corners of the earth even now who maybe seriously have never heard of Jesus. I think any modest Christian.
Well, what about the good rabbi who's very much, yeah, heard of Jesus, but, you know,
but rejects it? Right.
Right. I mean,
I was just going to say, I don't think any Christian should ever be making pronouncements on any other person's soul and its, you know, eternal destination. I think a Christian should say, we believe it, we leave it to God's justice and God's pure, you know, total knowledge of what's in a person's heart and why they believe or don't believe something.
Yes, but I think, and I knew this would be a very touchy topic for a lot of people, 210-1667, 210-1667. I think it's clear, though, that it is Christian orthodoxy, as I was taught in a strict environment as a youth, that unless you accept Jesus as your central Lord and Savior, you are at least not getting in heaven. Whether you go into the fire, you know, that's another question. I mean, there's a lot of debate about that.
I prefer to say it this way, that if you don't believe in Jesus and accept, you know, his atonement for your sins and believe that, your salvation is not certain, okay? The New Testament teaches, the Gospels teach, that by believing that, we are forgiven and we are saved. I'm not going to go around and telling people, well, if you say you don't believe it, you're going to hell. You know, I don't think Christians ever need to go that far. I think it's fair to say your salvation is perhaps uncertain if you don't believe that.
Meaning, who knows? You could just end up in a below a diner in New Jersey. Who knows? But you've got other religions, of course, and there's many that then would be in the same, suffer the same fate. You know, so in other words, I guess Christianity or any religion is saying, look, line up. There's a welcome sign here. You can join us, but if you don't join, I don't think this guy was out there saying that Jews and Muslims and atheists are all going to go into the eternal fire. I just think he was reinforcing his Christian belief. Hold on, because we're not done with this yet, if that's okay.
Sure.
Chad Sanborn is on the line. George is calling in. I just am fascinated by this. More on the Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com.
As life celebrations bring people together, you'll be comforted knowing we have community rooms available for those who wish to serve food and refreshments before, during, or after your gathering. This is Pete Gunderson. We're here to assist with every detail. Learn more at GundersonFH.com. Gunderson Funeral and Cremation Care, your hometown life celebration center.
Gunderson
Great Joe DiMaggio still holds the major league record for the longest hitting streak at 56 games. Bucks Takeout Pizza has a 56-year winning streak for the best thin crust pizza in the city. Bucks Pizza has a unique taste like no other. Handmade pizzas with homemade sauce and homemade sausage. Two Madison locations on University Avenue and Cottage Grove Road. Just go to BucksPizzaMadison.com. BucksPizzaMadison.com.
The all-new Mitch Hanks Show would like to thank our sponsors. We're grateful for their support of the all-new Mitch Hanks Show.
When it comes to telephone on-hold advertising, some commonly asked questions are, why do we need an on-hold message? How do we write a script? How long should the message be? How does the message get played? How much does it cost? I'm Bob of Abella Creative Services, and a telephone on-hold message speaks directly to your target audience while they're on hold with your company. Continuously advertises only your business without the clutter of competitive ads and for just a fraction of conventional advertising costs. At Bob Abella Creative Services, we'll help you draft a well-written script, provide the appropriate announcer, music, course sound effects, and the studio time and expertise to put it all together. We'll also provide you with any special equipment you might need to play your on-hold message. Even though we probably have more experience than most other on-hold message companies, we'll cost you less. Let Bobabella Creative Services stretch your advertising dollar with an on-hold message that provides your customers with real, actionable solutions to their problems. Bobabella Creative Services gets results. Just send us an email at bacsgetsresults@gmail.com. That's bacsgetsresults@gmail.com.
For nearly two decades, Troy Research has been measuring attitudes and opinions for our clients worldwide. Success is determined by your customers. What do they know that you don't? Ask them. For Sony Motion Pictures, the Green Bay Packers, the Wisconsin Historical Society, Troy Research has asked questions that made decision makers wiser and more successful. Where can good research take your business? Call or email to talk about it. Troy Research, 271-8884. Or email jlittle@troyresearch.com. Welcome back to the Mitch Hanks Show. Mitch seeks the truth by inviting all sides of the issue. Thanks for listening to the Mitch Hanks Show.
We're talking to Jed Sanborn, who's a businessman and former city council member and Christian. We're talking about this diatribe that Bernie Sanders went on, going after Russell Vought, who's a nominee for deputy budget director in the White House because of some Christian posting he did in college. And Bernie said, well, I'm damned. Muslims all damned if they don't believe in Jesus. What about Jews? You know, the whole, I mean, some pretty basic religious questions going after some central Christian doctrine. And the guy kept saying, I'm a Christian. I know you're a Christian. You know, and Bernie got upset and then said, I don't think this is the type of nominee we should have. So Jed Sanborn is on, who said he is offended by that. Or is that fair to say, Jed, you're offended by that?
Well, certainly. I mean, think of one of the things that he suggests, that Bernie Sanders is suggesting. I mean, it's one thing to say, you know, your faith is, you know, is exclusionary and discriminatory or whatever, but he's also suggesting he's unfit for the job, that because he believes this, he must be a hateful person. He must hate anyone who isn't a Christian.
Well,
and that makes
a fanatic. A fanatic. I mean, I know a lot of, quote, shall we say, classic liberal friends who, anybody that has fundamentalist beliefs, I don't care if it's a Christian or Muslim or anything else, would be a fanatic. I mean, you know, Mike Pence is called that by friends of mine. He's a fanatic.
Then he's saying that every Christian is a fanatic.
Well,
and Muslims too. I mean, don't Muslims believe if you don't do the prayers to Mecca, you know, five times a day?
There are a lot of rules there.
If you don't believe the tenets of the Quran, you're also not.
You're
safe.
In big trouble. Let's go to the phones. 210-1667, old George.
Hey, Mitch, from Green Bay.
Green Bay, what's going on up there? You're there a lot.
Yeah, I know, a lot of business. Hey, I love your and Jed's conversation here.
Oh, thank you.
And I think that, I pretty much agree with what he's saying. I mean, I don't think there's anybody. I'm a strong Christian. I believe very strong, but the key is I believe. Jed believes. You believe. Dr. Martin Luther King believed. We don't know. None of us, only one person that we believe in as Christians has been to that side and come back. Went into hell after he died and came back, you know, and then 40 days after he walked the planet again, went to heaven for the final, you know, till he comes back second time. So there's nobody that knows. There's nobody. I feel in my heart, I know I love my wife. I know I love my grandkids. I know, but believing in God, Mitch, and believing our faith, so that's why I think Christians, a lot of Christians, we're open-minded to say, try this. Jesus helps. That's why guys in prison that are going straight use Jesus to help people be strong, to get their lives on straight, because it's a support mechanism. If he's not there, I believe he's going to be there. I believe we'll see him when we go to heaven. But, I mean, am I going to be in a deathbed? The guys on the cross, Jed, that one of them said, I accept you when he was dying, and the other one said he didn't. And Jesus said, you'll be with me in paradise tonight. I mean, so deathbed conversions, we don't know what's in somebody's heart. And my dad used to always argue, the Bible says, in my house there are many mansions. I go to prepare one for you. And we always used to debate that. Does that mean that Mother Teresa, who is probably the nicest, did the most Christian acts, but the guy that just converted at the end of his life, after he'd been pillaging and raping and doing all of that stuff, is he going to be in the same glory level that she is, or we got different levels?
I can't answer those, but certainly fascinating questions. I just think we're talking about this current issue where Senator Sanders is saying to his colleagues, this person is unfit.
He's your typical 10-year-old liberal demo that's spoiled brat and has no room for anybody else's opinion. Well, he makes me throw up.
Well, again, we should reserve this for Senator Sanders himself. But he did say this nominee is unfit because of his religious beliefs.
My God.
Which he'd be taking.
Let's put an atheist. Let's put an axe killer in.
I guess he's looking for a liberal Christian. Is that what we're interpreting from that?
I don't understand.
I don't know what he would consider to be acceptable. I hear this a lot with people like at the sitting around for coffee. Though benign, it's pretty benign. Meaning they don't like for it to be too fundamentalist.
How can Democrats be Christians? I don't understand those words together.
Well, there are plenty of Democrats who are Christians, especially south of Dane County. But anyway, thank you for that, George. I just,
good show again, as usual.
I appreciate it. Jed Sanborn, I think that's what it is. I think people who live a largely secular life are uncomfortable, you know, submitting to a rather spiritual and unscientific. I know you think there's some science behind Christianity.
Yeah, it's anything but unscientific.
Well, there's no videotape of the activities, you know, around
the
time.
Yeah, but unscientific suggests that you think science shows it to be wrong.
Oh, I see. Well, no, but it does command a certain amount of faith, doesn't it? I mean, you know, we don't have forensic evidence in large supply.
And there is evidence.
Well, the Bible would be...
Yeah, but I think to your point a minute ago, is Bernie Sanders is a bigot, is what he is. I think Bernie Sanders hates Christianity. He'll accept some kind of, you know, nominal Christian who doesn't really take seriously what the Bible says. Anyone who actually believes it to be true, I think Bernie Sanders has contempt for.
That may very well be. That could very well be. But I think he's not alone. I think there's a kind of a large secular population that views literalists of any sort of religious faith to be fanatics. And I think that's what's clear with what we saw.
Sure.
And, you know, you do what you got to do. And I think this issue, but most people in polls, aren't they believe in some religion in this country? I mean, isn't like still like 70-80% or beyond?
I thought it was still even closer to
90%. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah. You have various levels of faith and various levels of belief in the Bible in terms of its, you know, doctrine, but they do claim to be a believer in some form, like 90%. Anyway, Jed Sanborn, we appreciate the time.
All right, thanks.
And we will come back. Wow. That's a big topic, is it? But, you know, let's face it. I mean, a postscript to this when we come back. The Mitch Hank Show on MadisonTalks.com.
This is the all-new Mitch Hank Show.
MadisonTalks.com is the home of Madison's most creative talk radio. If you have a serious gift of gab, you have stories to share, political, social, or religious positions to express, contact Madison Talks to have your own 60-minute weekly podcast recorded and posted for the world to hear. Have a new book to promote? Madison Talks is the ideal place to promote it. Fly solo or line up guests for your weekly live talk session. When your 60-minute program is finished live streaming, it'll be posted as a podcast to MadisonTalks.com for listening 24/7. Take your message to the world with MadisonTalks.com. Call 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. That's 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. MadisonTalks.com. Looking for your creative commentary.
You're listening to The Mitch Hank Show. Once again, here's the voice of uncommon sense, Mitch Hank.
You're listening to The Mitch Hank Show on MadisonTalks.com. That is our website, MadisonTalks.com. We have a lot of different podcasts posted on there. We heard Tommy Thompson before the show tonight. Brian Beebe, who did his show live at 3:15 or so today. And, of course, when you do your podcast in our studios here on West Washington Avenue, you are live around the world. So you can hear it live in Africa or wherever you might want to be for the show. And we have three phone lines so you can call in. But then after the show, you're posted on MadisonTalks.com. So Brian Beebe with some killer podcasts on MadisonTalks.com. Follow the prompts. You can click live, or you can click Madison Talks podcast, which include Brian or Tommy Thompson or anybody else, or Mitch Hank podcast, where our shows are logged there as well. So in the podcast world, you don't have to hear it live. It's just there for your convenience, and we post what we have and various guests that you might find interesting and so forth, and we're evolving as we go. But we encourage you to check us out, madisontalks.com. Not hard to find a website in 2017. On your phone, your laptop, your desktop, and with the case. Now, in terms of the data usage, we're working on that. We're kind of working on our little plan here in terms of developing our own app, and you know, we'll see about that because data is an issue. But I want to tell one story about the religious question. I was on a news story in Green Bay with my photojournalist partner, and he was in sort of an angry, rebellious, anti-religion type mindset at the time. And we're shooting something from Holy Week, and we're shooting kids going into church with their parents and grandparents. And at one point, my buddy said, "Oh, look at that. Look at conformity. Look at indoctrination. Indoctrination, that kid. The kid has no voice, no say." And I said, "Well, nonconformity is also a form of advocacy, right? I mean, you're advocating rebellion. You are advocating nonconformity just because they are advocating, people who are going into the church are advocating conformity of some belief, acceptance, submission, all those things. But you condemn them because you want to advocate for nonconformity or rebellion. But if you think you're better than they are because you believe something else, then I would say that you are arrogant and ultimately fascist if you look down at them as human beings." Sort of like an IU fan looking down on Butler, as I talked to a sports talk show host, the stepchild, the third-rate podunk little sister. There's arrogance everywhere. People having their license plates. People can't remember. Talent is God-given. Be thankful. Fame is man-given. Be humble. Conceit is self-given. Be careful. Mitch Hank, Madison Talks.com.